Well, that's going to be funny. Could we have a crypto millionaire story in the works if I have a wallet full of mined XRP that I haven't looked at in the better part of...
That would be epic.
7 years.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. The email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chatter Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. Honorary shopkeeper Flary is on with us, as is Master Bagger Baba Yaga. I'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. If you're new to the shop or trading in general, we highly encourage you to check out one of our many mini-series. How about the easier-to-pronounce Knowledge Center? Both of those can be found on the website, bandoftraderspodcast.com. Now we've got a lovely, alliterative, non-sequitur show for you today. But before we do that, we shall banter. Baba, I see you got some nice gear on today. You want to give us some tourney updates?
Yeah, well, all of this gear was purchased within 5 minutes of Cameron Indoor Stadium, maybe 10 at the most, in the beautiful... is it the tri-state area of North Carolina? I'm not sure what you would call it, but... right up there where the Blue Devils play.
What city are they actually out of?
Durham.
Durham?
Yeah, Durham. No, so what are we saying? Yeah, man, tournament, it's going live. Shout out March Madness. This is kind of beginning my favorite time of the year when I like college football. Don't hear me say I'm not a college football fan, but I think March, April probably is my more preferred time season for sports and athletics because you have – the first golf tournament that kind of matters, the Players Championship, just wrapped up not too long ago.
Did we talk about that?
What a choke job, dude.
What happened there? Yeah, I didn't get to see the end there.
It's hard to win. That's what it is. That's the bottom line.
It's like, the best part of watching those, isn't it, though?
It's hard to watch. It's hard to win.
It's hard to watch. Hard to win. Poor guy. Spahn is what he's won once in his career.
Yeah, but you kind of have to go through a couple of those losses in order to learn how to win,
yeah,
right?
But it takes a long time to even get to go through that, you know?
He's
you
been labor, around as a player
yes,
for a while.
Yes, yeah. And you labor a long time just to lose, to get the experience of what the losing is, so that the next time.
Right.
And that's a pretty prestigious tournament. It's right up there. It's kind of the fifth major, you know, it's a bigger deal.
That's the unofficial one, right?
Yeah.
That's the one Ricky Fowler won after being voted like the most overrated player.
Yeah.
I think it was like the year he was voted that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that happens. Then we obviously March Madness. We're pretty big basketball fans in this household, specifically for the Duke Blue Devils, in case anyone didn't catch that. And then shout out, follow my Twitter and scroll back. You'll see us at Cameron Indoor. Shout out Cameron Indoor. Loudest place I've probably ever been. Other than like some rock concert. And then you have the Masters, dude.
Don't go too far back on that Twitter timeline, though, because you'll see some very triggering things if you're from Arizona.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you posted some NCAA championship title.
Oh, that was directly at you. Sorry. When we beat Arizona.
Yeah,
sorry. So we got March Madness. We've got the Players kicking off official golf tournaments that matter. Then next month we'll be in Augusta if anybody's going to be at the Masters.
Oh, you're going to the? That's right. You do go. I forget. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've got, we stay with a buddy that lives in Augusta, and we go spend the weekend at his house every year and go to the tournament for a day or two. And
that's right. Which hole are you going to be hanging out at if we want to look
for you? We usually walk early, sit late. So yeah. We'll probably be somewhere around 16. That's usually where we hang out. Yeah. So I got another friend that runs a scoreboard there just in that same area. So we go hang out with him behind the school board sometimes. Makes us look really important.
Right.
yeah.
So what's your go-to Augusta drink and food?
Mm.
Well, honestly, I don't know. Do you know much about the food situation down there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's historic, to say the least.
Yes.
So that's why
So the first thing I would say is you can't go wrong. You literally could just walk in and pick anything, and unless you're allergic to it, it'll be good. I am definitely a big egg salad sandwich guy. The pimento cheese is good, but the egg salad's just magical.
Man, my wife does such a good job of that. She puts vinegar in hers that just gives it that tang. So
if I'm going through, the kind of rule of thumb is no alcohol for me before 10 a.m. So, and
that's the rule, but
whose rule is that?
Well, it's the rule from the first time I went when I started drinking a little bit too early in the day, and then I just ended up melting into a chair about 12 o'clock.
But it was fun, though.
It was. I mean, it was especially hot that year, too, so that didn't help. But I go, so to answer your question, egg salad, maybe two, depending on how we're feeling, and then pack of peanuts. Right, get a little extra protein there, and then some
goober peas,
and then I don't know, then no brands, dude. It's all just Masters brands. So, and then I usually go sports beverage because it's not Powerade, even though it is, but it's just labeled sports beverage, blue, and then the peach ice cream in between. The good dessert for me is the peach ice cream sandwich. So it's two sugar cookies with peach ice cream in the middle. Unbelievable. And then obviously we go import and domestic on the beer because you want to have both of the cups to take home. So it's a good time.
You mentioned the thing with the Players' Championship, the choking, the meltdown. It kind of reminded me of a show I found on Netflix a while back. I don't know if you ever saw that, but it was like a documentary focusing on the biggest runner-ups in history.
Interesting.
One of them was one of the greatest meltdowns in golf that ever happened. This guy was taking a four-stroke lead into the final hole and melted down on that hole.
Oh man,
it was one of the Opens. It was the British Open or one of those, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy. Before I ever traded, obviously I played a lot of golf, and when you have a hole like that, you call it a blow-up hole, right?
Yeah.
That's just what everyone calls it. When you're leading or you're betting with friends and you're
tin cup meltdown. Give me another ball. Give me another ball.
Yep,
give me another ball.
And
that's how I feel in trading. Give me another trade.
I was about to say, I experienced those emotions long before I ever took a trade trying to pull off some kind of golf shot on the course. So
it's actually a good – any tips for – getting past that? How do you stop taking another ball out of the bag?
Well, you have to take another ball out of the bag because you have to finish the hole, but
right.
It's more about the selection.
Yeah.
It's more about the selection. And honestly, it's very similar to trading.
That actually isn't a terrible point, because sometimes what you really need is a quick layup to you get need yourself to out of that.
Yeah, you need to hit the shot you know you can make, not the shot you hope you can make.
Right.
So if you've not hit that shot before, and that's for me, with golf, my comfort in that game is I can almost feel the shot that I need to hit because I know I've hit that shot before. And even if I can't quite recall it, I just know
there's a little comfort to it.
If this is a 115 yard shot that needs to stay low out of the wind, I've hit that a million times. So it's not it's not a problem. That doesn't mean it's going to land 1 inch from the hole every time, but the likelihood that gets bladed, over the green or cut way off into the woods or something is super low. Just it's kind of, We've been here before. We know what we're doing. And I think that's that really ties to trading quite well, you know, the comfort
your,
trades
your fallback.
Staying within yourself, whether that's leverage or the amount of range you're trying to trade, like the amount of points you're trying to realize.
Wasn't Flaherty just talking about that a couple weeks ago about like having to screw down and like go back to just like a handful of setups that you know you have ultra faith in?
Yeah, I mean, when you're in trouble, that's what you do. You go back to the good old trusties.
Right, the get you out of the weeds shots or the sand save yep. shots, yeah.
And then you see the pros, right? And this is the funny thing. You see pros hit shots that seem like miracles, you know? Like you've got
watching
a pro.
Jordan Spieth in any major.
Yeah, but like, but these guys have such control and awareness over everything that's going on throughout, like making this swing decision to hit this certain special magic shot. That to them, I mean, there's maybe a measure of pressure to make it happen, but it's not like they're out there for the first time ever trying to, I mean, that might be the first time in that setting for that to happen, but it's not the first time that they've hit that shot.
I guarantee you they have more hours spent practicing that shot than I have spent in the entire game of golf in my entire career.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. So I think there's a lot of parallels to golf, honestly.
Yeah, I mean.
Or any sport.
Golf is such a mental game, though, because really golf is you and you alone, like really.
You and the course, yeah. Like you and the market. And yep. And it's your performance that's that. And the cool thing is there's no one that you can that can take away what you're doing. So like a teammate can't let you down or a team, you know, like, you know, you make a great pass and they miss it or whatever, whatever. Or someone doesn't block, like that's none of that's a thing in golf, mm-hmm. you know. And so it really comes down to execution. In a moment between you, your ears, and whatever the course is requiring of you in that moment. And trading's much the same, right? Like the market's a little different every day, just like every golf shot's a little bit different. But generally speaking, you know what the goal is.
A lot of them
just
rhyme.
Have to do it. Yeah.
Is that what I'm saying? History doesn't repeat, but it often rhymes.
Yeah.
No?
Yep.
I mean, speaking of a different market, how about the market we've had the last couple weeks since at least this group's been together?
Dude. My God, dude. I've actually
my
been like
market,
trying to,
man. My kind
I've
of
I've been
market.
Needing to like step back. It's fun, but like that this kind of volatility is what gets me in trouble.
Well, I think like this week specifically it's a little like I didn't trade hardly at all this week. We were vacation like
spring breaking.
Yes, thank you. Spring breaking it, going hiking, adventuring and stuff. But I would definitely say last week had a lot of those like fun vibes. This week, looking at it and experiencing it a little bit, it looks a little more like a might have been a little annoying at times.
It's just there's you just don't know when a tape bomb is going to hit. Like,
well, it's roll week too, right?
Yeah. That's not helping things either. That FOMC happened, which speaking of which, I can talk a little bit about that if we want.
Yeah, hit me with it.
Oh, should we play a new song then? Do the whole
get us
like,
into
thing?
The news, bro.
Let's do the
Dow drops deep on moving inflation, COVID frustration, war damnation. We're just bringing you the fucking news. You gotta recognize the game if you don't want to lose. We're just
trading information. I feel like I did my part really well. Yeah, we are.
Rioters raiding, insider trading, taxes are raising, bills on the hill. We got a crypto mill. No, they ain't growing weed. When the Fed speaks today, it's some shit we don't need. Two fools trading information.
What?
Two fools trading information.
I'm inclined to agree.
Two fools trading information.
Accurate. Very accurate. Whatever. Goddamn, Danica makes a good song, couldn't he?
You're like the chillest hype guy in that, in a rap song in history.
Yeah.
It was
so fun recording all those. I recorded just a bunch of just me going, yeah. What?
Huh? I feel like I should be, so I ever even knew Kyle. I knew, obviously, I knew Flaherty and had heard him on the show. That's how I found out about Two Bulls. But way back, like, you know, let's go 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I would hear that Two Bulls, da da da. I'd be riding on my John Deere on a Friday, right. my earbuds in, my headphones on, just thinking, man, I wonder what they're going to talk about today. And look where we are now, sitting here. Yeah.
Look where we are today. We need to...
Yeah, it's crazy. So interest rates?
Yes. So speaking of Powell and saying some shit we don't need. No.
Yeah.
They held things steady. Benchmark interest rates held steady on Wednesday, but the interesting thing was Powell coming out saying there's high uncertainty about the potential impact of the Trump administration's trade and other economic policies. So it looked like Trump fired some shots at him after this came out. I wasn't sure what happened first, but it kind of looks like maybe Powell fired the first shots there.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
At least just based off of that statement there. He definitely was pointing towards tariffs as being like the biggest uncertainty in their ability to forecast, and they actually cut their their GDP forecast for the year down. It was 2.1% expansion that they had forecast in December, and now it's down to 1.7%. So inflation's moving up, Powell said at the news conference, partly in response to tariffs, and we think there may be a delay in further progress over the course of this year.
This is a question I have. Like, I know everyone, not everyone, but I know that, like, the presidency and all of this is very polarizing for people. You know, like, let's burn Teslas and
stuff
like
that.
Yeah,
it's a little much.
It's a bit extreme, no matter, really, it's really impossible to justify that type of activity, in my opinion. But no matter where you fall and think, the decreasing GDP expectations seems like a weird one to me.
Mm-hmm.
That just seems kind of like that'll be one to come back and be like the surprise miss. Like, oh, we didn't see that coming. It's, you know, it's way better because a couple of things. One, isn't like, so GDP is what, like $25 trillion?
Right.
Something like that. It's right. A large, large number. But the one thing I find interesting is the golden ticket citizenship thing.
Which is?
I say interesting, regardless of how you feel about it. It's a creative idea to raise funds selling U.S. citizenships to high net worth performing like business owner people around the world, residency basically fast tracking top performing people in certain businesses and markets to citizenship and residency. And so I anecdotal, and somebody could, maybe you could find it quicker than I could, but like if that policy goes forward, that's like a 25% increase in GDP. Because I think they were saying that's like $5 trillion they could raise by selling those. If they sold, I think they have a certain number they're targeting to sell. And that would literally be, I think it was five, unless I really misread something, I think it was like $5 trillion that they could raise from selling those. That seems not right, though. But
yeah, I think they're $5 million a piece. Is the price.
They're five million. Am I getting million and trillion? Let's look it up. How much?
I mean, it's just a couple of zeros, but yeah.
Let's see. Golden ticket citizenship. Okay, so here's a Forbes article on this. Card will cost about $5 million, give buyers the same privileges as green card holders who have permanent residency and work authorizations in the U.S. President said wealthy people who buy the card would be investing in the U.S. by spending a lot of money, paying a lot of taxes, and employing a lot of people. Card will launch sometime over the next 2 weeks. When was this posted? So it's February 25th. Oh, so this should be happening soon, if it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, we just need to know how many he's willing to do.
I'm trying to see here. It'll replace the EB-5 program, which allows immigrants to secure green cards if they create a business and at least 10 permanent full-time jobs for U.S. workers. It's unclear if they will lose privileges if the program ends. The visa usage reached its highest point ever in 24 with at least 12,839 EB-5 visa members used through last July.
They want to sell 200,000 of these.
If it's replacing the EB-5 visas, then the numbers of those from the past year was less than 13,000.
Right. So
that might be a bit excessive.
This article says it's possible there will be no caps, but because we're doing to balance this budget, blah, 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 the number of people waiting for such a visa, they estimate, is higher in the 200,000 range, though it's not clear. Blah, blah, blah. Anyways, well, that could be a trillion. So maybe not five. It could raise a trillion, possibly. That's still a lot of money.
If you're talking about 13,000, like if you're talking about all the EB-5 people that switch over, and at $5 million a pop, that's $65 billion. That's nothing to sneeze at. I don't think it puts much of a dent in
But as a percentage of GDP, that's like...
$65 billion out of 25 trillion? That's less than a percent.
Yeah, never mind. Well, I guess my math was a little wrong. But let's say they sell a bunch of them. Then it could be a lot. Anyways, that, and then I wonder, like, if this whole, like, manufacturing, all of the tariff stuff, if that is really, that's the big bet, right? Does that ignite United States manufacturing and economy vibes, or does that just, do they just keep on with all of that and pass the cost on to the consumer? That's the big seesaw bet, right?
I mean, well, the problem with it, the way I see it and the way that Eric has kind of explained it to us is that we'd end up going backwards then. Like, we don't do those manufacturing jobs anymore because it's cheaper for us to have somebody else do it and then let Americans go do other higher paying jobs or things that their capital is better invested in. We've transitioned more to a service-based economy because that's where the money is. It's more money for us to be able to go out and do those things. We'd have to take less money to go and start, you know, screwing back end seatbelts into cars.
Sure.
Now, there's some jobs that require a presence in the U.S. that we should have, things like national security, things like steel making, like that has to be here in the States. We have to have the ability to do that. We have to have the ability to do semiconductor manufacturing, things that we need that we can't rely on other people.
So then I guess the question is,
what we should be protecting.
I was going to say it would just depend on what type of industry the pressure or the push is to create jobs and stuff like that. Because definitely if you're running the business end of a screwdriver, that's not...
Well, the biggest problem is you put in a tariff to protect, say, steelmakers. Then that's great. You protect the steelmakers, but then you put a lot of other people out of business. The people who make kegs for breweries, the people who make like the other finished products that steel uses, like there. And you protect the steelmakers, but you've also screwed everybody else out who was going to other markets to get a cheaper product.
Oh, well, it sounds like they need to figure it out.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. I think there is, no matter your thoughts on the current president, the drive, in my opinion, to run the country business-esque, more like a business, I feel like you hear more of that type of language. And I just wonder if that if GDP is going to be a big part of kind of how he measures all of that. And if so, then I don't think he's going to be a big fan of it dropping. So I would imagine he's going to do whatever he can to push it.
I mean, also, you know, every time I talk to Eric and he talks about how screaming red hot the economy is and how great everything is, and he'll ask you to point to one piece of data that says that anything looks bad whenever you're talking about potential recessions. So I don't know that I believe the odds. I mean, they even says in here, I guess, that the odds of recessions are extremely low. So maybe GDP doesn't grow as much, but I think Trump's even said that he doesn't expect to. He expects some short-term pain, so that would probably fall under that, be my guess.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing, though, is that Trump did reignite his battle with Powell, it sounded like, because as soon as the FOMC stuff was done, he was on Truth Social and immediately chastising Powell again, saying that they'd be much better off cutting rates as tariffs start to transition their way into the economy. Added, do the right thing.
So there's that gives me another question. There's this narrative of the government has to refinance a bunch of debt, so we want interest rates lower for that reason. I read that somewhere. I don't follow macro news, so if anyone's listening to this and they're like, wow, that guy sounds like he's from South Carolina and doesn't know what he's talking about. You're right on both fronts.
I just, you know, I have Eric on this program like maybe once a month, and all these questions would be great to ask him, you know, an economist who understands this stuff. Because I wonder, you know,
I mean, is there a motivation on his part to see, you know, rates down because of something?
I don't know what that was.
Interest rates on homes and cars and stuff.
I don't know what that would have to do with anything that the government does as far as how the government prints money.
I feel like they could just make it up.
Right? I don't know. I did have a gold story on here.
Yeah, let's go gold.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what-were-they-thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective. Real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shaped the country, without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states, and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
This was more about the gold market itself and how it's been outperforming the S&P by a significant margin.
Have you traded gold? Anybody traded any gold? You trade, Flaherty?
I pulled up silver today just after banks. I was joking about it, but I didn't touch it.
Palladium. You looking to fucking die or something?
Dude, Two-Year Flipper's been trading it like crazy, though.
Silver?
Gold. Gold. He's been, that's the one he's been all nuts on ever since he stopped trading equity or bonds as much as he does. As much as he used to. So I guess gold prices, they hit a fresh record highs above $3,000 an ounce. But what was really standing out is over the last 3 months, S&P has underperformed gold futures by a negative 24%, which is the widest margin since March of 22, which was a period marked by stock stress and demand for safe haven assets. So everybody who's thinking that gold is no longer the inflation hedge, I guess maybe that's not the case anymore.
So that's my question.
Right?
Is it or is it not? Not long ago, we were saying it's not. Not we, but like people.
Kind of looking like it might be now, huh?
I mean, it's something because this sucker's gone up and to the right since 2024, really.
Kind of interesting when that actually started happening. When did the gold trade like really start kicking in? Was that?
I mean, I would say like the easy gold trade probably kicked in right around December, the end of December.
Yeah.
And then there was one big pullback in February, and now it's been kind of up and to the right again. Looking at a daily. I mean, you're talking about covering some serious ground on gold, though.
I know. You're talking about... So you got gold doing that. You have Bitcoin, which was the one that we thought had taken over as the inflation hedge. It's definitely not doing that.
No. What is it sad days for the Bitcoin narrative boys?
Every time there's a bull market.
What do you think, Flaherty? You're the crypto guy.
You'd be able to buy... I mean, listen... Unless, I mean, Trump's making an effort for it, but I doubt, you know, I mean, we still got a few more years of this, but I mean,
yeah,
it's not going to be the gold standard, the Bitcoin standard anytime soon.
Right, right.
I don't think until they make it just easier for the everyday person to access. But I mean, it's the same narrative that comes back every bull market in crypto is that, you know, it's going to replace gold or something or a global currency. And, you know, I mean, listen, if it pushes it to a quarter million of, you know, a Bitcoin, then great, whatever the narrative is. But I don't see it being, you know, Fort Knox is a bunch of zip drives anytime soon. But
right.
So is Fort Knox, is the gold there? That's the real question.
Is it still there?
Yeah. What happened to that store? Like. That was a whole thing for, you know, yeah, that sure did. they were getting ready to break down the gates and then, you know, whatever the next headline that came through. And now you don't hear about it. They started blowing up a few cyber trucks and then nobody wants to talk about going to Fort Knox anymore. But.
Hey, you want to know a true story? This is my grandmother. She's passed away now. But she went on this big trip with her daughters at one point, and she wanted to go see. I don't think they really understood Fort Knox or what it was. So they thought, like, you know how you can go see like military aircraft carriers and things like that on the coast and like Virginia or whatever. So wherever they went to wherever that is and tried to just drive up to Fort Knox in a freaking minivan. And they ended up obviously guns drawn, stopped in the middle of whatever that access road is. Grandma out on the side of the road, grandpa out on the side of the road, aunts out on the side of the road. Suitcases out of the car, detectors under the car, everything had to be gone through. It was a real ordeal. That really happened.
Those people who man those security checkpoints, they don't joke around, man.
They were not. They did not care that she was an old woman.
No.
Not at all.
I don't see anything that confirms that the gold is there at Fort Knox yet, so I don't know if that's actually happened yet. But it's funny, Larry, you mentioned something about the same arguments they throw up there for crypto. I actually thought you were talking about gold for a second there, like the recession fears, like buy gold, everyone says buy gold. And that feels like a big scam to me too, that whole idea.
I mean, whatever the narrative is, right? I mean, obviously somebody's pushing it. You say, you tell everybody to buy gold when you already own a bunch. You tell everybody to buy Bitcoin when you already own a bunch, of course. Right,
yeah. What was that? George used to talk about that all the time. He used to say, like, the only reason you're telling me to buy it is because you have no more money. And you need more buyers.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to make a market.
So is Bitcoin at a sweet enough spot to start DCAing if you're a sideliner, Flary?
Around 80, was it 85 now?
Sitting at 84.3.
I mean, if it's got higher for before it does its 90% pullback, I would say somewhere in like this, the like mid to high 60s. It needs another leg down, kind of like this market, you know, like our markets do. They need like one more good leg down. But if it blows through that, man, I mean, it's gonna go back to 20-ish K before it goes to 250. But if it goes this, if it gets to like, you know, north of where it is now, call it 200 K this cycle, I think somewhere in like the mid to low 60s would be like the DCA area, and then if it starts to shit the bed below like 50, there's not much down there. You know, you're gonna see that. I mean, it's done it the last four cycles. Like, it just pukes out 90% of the value, and
right.
You know, so
I do like that 60 retest though. I think that looks like it'd be a
that like 65 area somewhere. 65 to 68 is sweet.
What was the other coin you mentioned? You said something about, was it Hexcoin?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing kind of the throwback show with the news and everything. And I think it was, it had to be 2 years ago we talked about, I think his name is Richard Hart, the guy who started Pulse Chain. And when we were first talking about it, he was getting indicted for, you know, some version of scamming in Pulse Chain. But he's back in the news on it, you know, and somebody found
his case
exploit,
got dismissed.
Pulse Chain. Yeah. But then, so his case got dismissed, but then there was also, I think there was like a big exploit that they found in the staking in on the chain, and somebody found a way to, you know, whatever. I don't know. But that guy, he's a character and a half, Richard Hart. Holy cow.
Just looking at the picture of him in this article. But yeah, the U.S. federal court dismissed the SEC's case against him. They cited lack of personal jurisdiction as the key reason for dismissal. I'm trying to see what that actually means. They found that his marketing and sales activity are not specifically directed at the U.S., but were global in nature.
Would agree.
Okay. Their misappropriation were dismissed because the alleged fraudulent activity occurred outside the U.S. A regulator failed to demonstrate his transactions happened in the U.S. or that fraud had a substantial effect in the country. Okay, so He got his case dismissed, but not because he didn't do any fraud. It's just because he didn't do it in the U.S. Oh, sometimes I love this country.
I mean, that's kind of the crypto narrative right now. They're calling it crime season. It's, you know, I mean, meme coins and the whole pump fund thing. It's just like, you know, the celebrity coins we were talking about a few weeks back. I mean, it's just out of control. Yeah. Unbelievable.
What was the thing about the Hex coin you said had an exploit or something? I'm trying to see if I can find anything in there.
Yeah, so the chain that it's on, I'm going to be like Baba talking about macro news, but crypto info. There's a they had to bridge it over and like fork the chain, and there was some exploit in it where somebody who had a bunch of stake in it, it became like worthless, and so then they had to like some guy found an exploit in it, made a shit ton of money, and that's why they were in the news on top of him doing it. But it's like the DOA chain or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. That whole I thought Hex was a good buy down there, and then they started indicting the guy. I was getting ready to buy a bunch of that coin, so I got lucky on that one. But
what was the other coins you watch? Mung, how's Mung doing?
Oh man, it's down. All alts are down. Pretty bad. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be buying much of anything that's not Bitcoin, and even Ethereum hasn't gone anywhere.
I know that was been the kind of disappointing one for me. That and I thought Cardano would get a bigger pop when they announced its potential in that group of U.S. crypto assets that they were talking about making that strategic reserve on.
Is XRP a thing anymore?
XRP, their case got dropped too, actually.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the biggest mover. I would guess it's one of the biggest gainers of the recent bull market. I mean, it was pennies.
Yeah, they're all over the news.
And well, I think it went well above $3, I want to say.
Oh, shit. Yeah, there's people.
It did. Look at that. Wow. I used to mine XRP. I wonder, I wonder if I even have. Well, that's going to be funny. Could we have a crypto millionaire story in the works if I have a wallet full of mined XRP that I haven't looked at in the better part of.
That would be epic.
7 years.
Do you want to pull it up now? Can you? Can we do it on air? Can we get your reaction? You see what that value is?
You got a million XRP on a laptop somewhere. You'd be a happy camper.
It would actually be on this computer, but I'm afraid that I have updated too many things since then. And hard drives have been taken out.
Oh, no.
Baba crashes the podcast and never returns after finding... Let me log off for a second and check this wallet on this.
Yeah, this computer never comes back.
Never comes back. Never to be heard from again. XRP price plummets. One big red candle. Baba sells a
million coins offloaded.
Oh man, it was never. So XRP was a privacy coin. I mean, you guys know a little bit about it, I'm sure, but so I never moved any of my. Is it XRP? No, not XRP. XRP is
Monero.
Ripple.
Monero is one.
No,
of the
what's the? What's the other privacy? It wasn't XRP that I used to mine. It was something
else. Cardano.
You guys keep talking. It wasn't Cardano. It was
Chia.
No.
Fartcoin.
It was
Pancake. Sushi coin.
Okay. Yeah. None of those.
Everything's a coin. I know. 1.5 million coins a day coming out of Pump Fund right now, roughly. It's just unbelievable.
Jesus. You still playing around on that? I see Solano took a bit of a hit, so you probably actually afford it now.
I mean, the market's more affordable. It's crazy the way the seasons go in that landscape. Like, you'll watch a week go by where no coins will get, you know, they'll bond and they'll get to maybe like 250, 300K, and then they'll just dump. And they get kind of everybody stuck in that thing where they're selling. And then now it's like they're pumping coins to like 2 to 8 million. And then they're kind of dumping. And you got the celebrity coins that are still just doing their thing where they're just getting everybody. But yeah, it just rotates so fast. And I mean, it's literally a needle in a haystack and a little bit of an insider game, in my opinion, to the point where like you have to be so in deep in the trenches and like the telegrams and like... You know, it's literally a Ponzi. Yeah. So you got to be like in one of the first groups that know that they're going to continue to push this coin and then to not sell it. And yeah, I don't know. It just became too much of a job where I was just like, okay, this isn't as fun as like there's 10 coins that are bonding right now and one of the 10 is going to go to 2 million and the other ones are going to go to zero and whatever. This is like needle in a haystack. And in that needle, you're still probably like, you know, 10 telegrams off of the group that actually controls all the supply. And it's tough, but I know we should actually have him on, but there's a guy that I trade with. His name is Rue Bourbon. He went with it and he is deep in the Telegram streets and in the meme coin streets. He does really well. I mean, he's got bots that are sniping, and he's like, he's following like Twitter feeds and all, like he's in deep, and he's done really, really well. He's turned a small amount of Solana into quite a bit and hit a few like big, like 2000x like returns and stuff like that, like $50 into 10 grand a few times. Like the guy's sharp, and I mean, to the point where like he's taking a little bit of his focus off of NASDAQ and really just trading like some of the higher time frame levels, trend breaks and stuff like that, and like focusing most of his attention on the meme coin market because he's that good at it. And again, I think if you are that good at it, there's a huge opportunity, but you have to, I mean, like anything, like you can't just like show up and yourself. This coin's funny, it made me laugh, I'm gonna buy it, which was my strategy for the longest time and it worked. Now, like, you know, you gotta have all these other tools and resources to really be competitive. But yeah. It's hot potato for sure, more than ever.
What's Portnoy's count up to now? How many coins has he launched?
Oh God, I don't even know if he ever officially launched Greed 3, but he kind of burned his burned his image in that whole market a little bit. But yeah, it was a little bit of the top too. You know, I mean, again, like the market's evolved so many times since then, but like that whole push really was like relatively the end of easy money, I would call it, in that sort of game. But yeah, I don't know. You still got all the celebrity stuff too. I mean, it's just, it's wild, man. I mean, they're just fleecing people. It's just extraction.
I still can't believe that. He launches it and dumps it in less than an hour.
He almost got me on that Greed too. I was like buying the pullback. And then it's funny, I could pull it up, I'll send you the picture. I bought like 2 minutes before he dumped and put in that candle. Yeah. It dropped 90%, but it recovered it back. I mean, I was just going to bag hold the shit to zero, and it recovered it back. I got out for break even. I think I was in like $1,000 of Greed 2 or something like that. And he dropped 90%, literally just incinerated my like complete like value of that particular coin. And it rallied all the way back, even actually up a little bit, and I got out so fast, and then it just, you know, just ground back. But yeah, I DCA'd the shit out of that too. I'm like, well, I might as well buy more since I can get, you know, 10 times what I bought now for the same amount of price. So, but yeah, I came back, I actually made a little bit, but yeah, I literally got dumped on a minute later after I bought by Portnoy. So thanks, buddy.
I'm surprised you actually went and you actually tried it on Greed too. Well, that one was, he did that during the live stream, right?
I mean, again, it's like, I wasn't like I was going to be like some like long-term investor in Greed too. I just thought, you know, hey, you know, this,
you figure you had at least until the live stream ended, right?
Yeah. I mean, I bought it, I think at like, I don't know, 6 or 7 million, and it dropped to like 200,000 in one candle or something like that. But I mean, I think I can still get a 10X out of the thing at, you know, at 5 or 6 million. It dropped to a couple hundred thousand and rallied back. It might have even been higher. It might have been like 9 or 11 million, something like that. But yeah, he nuked like a minute after I bought, and yeah, got lucky there that it even rallied back. But
all right, Bobby, you found anything in there yet?
No, I think I'm gonna have to go through my. I have a bunch of thumb drives. I have a flash drive with all of like old keys to stuff in there. So I'm gonna have to actually find that over the weekend and see if I have a wallet full of something.
If you do, are we ever going to hear from you again?
Yeah. I'll let you guys. If it is that full of something, we'll watch me crash something live.
Greed 4 is coming.
Yeah, I mean, it was Monero. That's what it was. XMR. So
XMR. Okay.
That, it's.
That's what I said apparently. Like 20 minutes ago while you were searching.
I know. I had to see the little logo. Sorry, I had to see the logo. God. My bad.
All right. Let's see. Any updates on the brackets here?
No games have finished, I don't think.
Nah. Just looking to see if there's any upsets going on. Xavier, Illinois, look like they got a close game going.
We referenced this winning bracket.
Yeah, I named mine answer key this year. I probably shouldn't have done that.
The brackets have been fun at our house because, like I told you, I think everybody filled one out, even my 5-year-old. And we're,
by the way, I love her sunglasses,
dude. That's like, she looked like a cartoon character,
right? she looked fabulous.
Yeah, but everyone filled out a bracket this year with some help from mom or dad or both, and we have them here in the den, and we watch a ton of basketball, and everyone's rooting for different teams based on who they've picked. Teams you don't even care about, you know, it's pretty fun. So
yeah, that's what makes it fun. And how many got Duke going all the way?
I think everybody in the house except one has Duke going all the way.
Who's the contrarian? Who figured out game theory?
I don't think you figured out game theory. I'm trying to look right now. I think it's my son. He has, he has Michigan State winning it all.
Ah, good man. He actually
has Arizona beating Duke. Is he the one?
Is he the one that you took the monster truck race?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He's my boy. That's my boy right there.
Yeah. He has Arizona in the Final Four.
Tell him I'll send him some swag.
Yeah, he has Arizona, Arkansas, Michigan State.
What day is that Arizona
and
game?
Tennessee. If Duke plays Arizona?
Yeah.
It will be it'll be probably midweek next week. It'll be Tuesday.
If that is an evening game, do you want to do a watch party?
Possibly. If they make it, if that does end up being a game, you know, Arizona's got to get through Oregon.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course. If they don't, then
And Duke's got to get through Baylor.
If if Arizona doesn't get through Oregon, then I'm not watching any more of this anyway, so.
I respect that.
But yeah, let's if they end up playing each other, let's do a little watch party. That might be some fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably going to do it for today's episode. So please join me in thanking Flary and Baba Yaga for jumping in tonight. Remember, you can show our panelists some love. You can click on all those links in the show notes. You can visit vantatrading.com to trade with Baba Yaga every day. Go to banditradterspodcast.com so you can stay up to date with everything we have to offer. When you finish all of that, improve your historical and economical knowledge by listening to The Buck Starts Here. Although I'm on it, and if you listen to this episode, you probably wouldn't think that you'd improve anything by listening to that. But you never know. We'll be back soon with another exciting NCAA update. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week.
Green week, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker.
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.